Yoga Vashishta, Part 5 by Swami Suryadevananda. Prayer before study. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. Let us refresh ourselves with what we covered the last time. We started with talking about the task. When one leads an examined life, one sees things for what they are and realizes that what needs to change is the way we see things. The world is what it is, and it will continue to be what it will. Why should things as they are affect me in the first place? The second point was to start in the heart first. The journey is much easier if we have a good foundation and a solid beginning. And struggle is often the sign of something wrong or something missing, and that is usually in the heart first. Then we moved on to self-control. If the heart and mind do not change first, you will find yourself being pulled on two ends and going nowhere but getting frustrated. When inner vigilance is active and natural as outer awareness, self-control becomes natural. And then we moved on to inquiry. Knowledge of truth does not arise from a book or teaching, but from one's own inquiry or direct observation. But first, you have to not participate in any attempted agitation and weaken agitation completely itself. Then inquiry too becomes natural. Our topics today are the illusion, the cure, spiritual discipline, and a few things that also help. Greetings. Let us start with the first point for today, illusion. An illusion is a perception that does not have a corresponding reality as such. And Vashishta talks about two things when he talks about the illusion: action and renunciation. And these are critical to the spiritual seeker because the wheels of karma turn by a type of action that Vashishta is referring to. He says, what is done by the mind alone is action, and what is renounced by the mind alone is renunciation. Well, this is quite different from how we see things usually. We consider that our inner world is sort of safe and it's okay to think on things as long as we don't act out on it. They cannot be circumstances. For instance, if I think of you in a certain way, as long as I don't act out on it, that stays in my inner world. But Vashishta says this is not so. It is the inner world that is the true, and the outer is only a help to seeing or understanding the inner, because we don't generally focus on the outer. On the inner. We're focused completely on the outer. So this changes the playing field a little bit. So we'll start talking about action first and then go on to renunciation second, the second half of this equation. On action, we have to first be clear and see the difference between what we think and what thought thinks. There is a difference between the two of them. What we think is what we are actively thinking at the moment or in the moment. But thought thinks too. Habitually, all the thoughts that have been registered and the impressions that have been registered in our mind are going to prop back up, not just of things and conditions, but about our feelings about them, and it's going to come up all mixed up. For instance, let's bring up an example we've already used before. I'm at the workplace, and I go to get a drink of water. Near the water fountain, I bump into a person, and I greet that person. That person does not reply back. Maybe they're preoccupied or whatever, but they don't acknowledge. It registers in my mind, what a rude person. Now, it takes the person and it adds rudeness to it. So when I even think about that person again or see that person, I'm going to think of the rude person. The rude person is coming. But the rude person is not coming. This person is coming. But we've added that value added, which gets added to the experience of all future experiences. Whenever that person's name is mentioned, or I think of that person, or I see that person, I'm going to see that rude person and not the person. So my friends, what happens is our world gets smaller and smaller and smaller by all these registerings when they may not necessarily be so. And that is part of the illusion. We begin seeing our mind and our notions mixed up with what we see out there till we're no longer seeing what's out there, but what's in here. And so Vashishtha tells us to be very careful about that. Our mind has to be watched without remission. And we deal with situations as they are, so we drain the mind of all its existing notions and we don't add any new notions to the mind. To be able to have this clarity in the mind where there is no doubt about what we see is the first part of the equation. The second part of the equation is renunciation. Outer renunciation, my friends, means nothing if we don't have psychological or inner renunciation. Physical renunciation helps and it is very necessary as we go along, but it is the inner renunciation that is critical according to Vashishtha. The inner renunciation starts when we see all these value added in the mind and realize that we are not getting a clear take on it. And our difficulties and our problems are not because of things as they are, but because of our own notions every time. When I see that person coming who I had a negative rub off yesterday, I see a negative person coming and I have a negative reaction. I'm not having a negative reaction to that person. I'm having a negative reaction to my own notion. The notion is in me, the reaction is in me. So the suffering or the experience is caused by me and in me. And this has to stop. This is an illusion. It's a wrong appearance. It's just that person who's coming. But I see that person coming and I react inwardly to it. That person is within me, within my own mind. And the reaction is also within my own mind. So the suffering that we experience, my friends, the seed of that suffering is in the mind and it blossoms in our mind itself. And so we are the cause of our own suffering. And unless we stop that wheel first, we're not going to be able to proceed further. There has to be clarity in the mind, and the mind has to be thinned down of all this baggage of concepts that it is carrying. And this is the first step that Vashishtha says. Now, outer renunciation definitely helps, because sometimes it's very difficult to scale this wall of all inner renunciation completely, that I'll have nothing to do with these notions or whatever. So it's a sort of slowing down where we pull out from situations that are aggravating or conditions that are aggravating just a little bit, till we can start seeing the clarity in the mind and getting a handle on it. And so outer renunciation also helps, and we have to be careful about this balance of outer and inner. We now come to the second portion, or the second topic for the day, which is the cure. The mind runs after objects, and why we run after them is what we need to look into. The mind does not want the object. The mind wants a sense of fullness that it feels will come by the object. So the mind feels a little bit less full, and it feels that a sense of fullness will be achieved, and that's what the mind seeks. But this inner fullness, where does it come from? The object will always be out there, whether it's a person, whether it's a thing, or whether it's a condition. The object is always out there, and the sense of I or being is always here. How does that contribute to a sense of fullness, which is felt within me? Inner fullness cannot come if it is not already out there, if it's not already in here. The mind does not see that, and it has this notion that the outer will bring about an inner sense of fullness or its own experience of fullness. That fullness is already there to begin with. So this is a strange game that the mind plays within itself, feeling a sort of hollow and then thinking that this object or this person or whatever external condition is going to bring about or remedy the condition. So the very first thing is that this mind has to be relieved of its objectness. The mind holds on to this objects and it becomes unsteady because of that. The more objects that the mind holds on to, the more unsteady it becomes, because it feels this will do this, this will not do that. This will bring joy, this will bring hurt. I push that away. And our state of mind is disturbed because of all these notions of objects that the mind has. And meditation cannot come until you have all these agitators in the mind removed. So as we've talked about before, we have to directly engage life and first of all, stop any new agitators from forming, and two, prevent any new agitators from acting. And how do we do that? Well, you have to stay awake, completely awake. Look at life and look at every condition as if you're looking at it the first time, when there were no notions present about it. The first time you encountered a situation and you didn't have any notions about it, you did a fresh take on that situation and you responded to it. Why can't that fresh take happen every single time, all the time? What does it cost you? Does it take any more? Not really. So the mind is relieved of its habitual ways, and it starts becoming thin. And that itself is a rising of peace, because when the agitation stops, the peace that is there naturally is once again experienced in the heart. That leads to meditation, and that leads to everything else very naturally. Now, this brings us to an important point, spiritual discipline. My friends, I know, when we hear that word discipline itself, we think punishment. Discipline is punishment. It's some kind of restraint. But spiritual discipline is something completely different. It is positive, not punitive. It is a better choice made, and therefore there is no loss. There is no sense of being punished at all. When the inner intelligence awakens, it looks or shines a light on what is best versus what is habit. It sees the difference between that. It avoids habit and does or selects what is best. Because one sees the danger in habitual ways and sincerely wants what is best. And the inner intelligence shows that way. So spiritual discipline actually is not a don't do this or denial. It is inner strength to stay the course for what is best. And when we stay the course for what is best, how can that be punitive in any way whatsoever? The best treatment to avoid this dreadful disease known as wrong perception or the perception of world illusion or samsara is the abandonment, Vasishtha says, of the pursuit of pleasure. We are not talking about abandoning pleasure, but the pursuit. The pursuit, we pursue something when we feel that that is going to bring about a state of completeness. So the precondition for that is already a sense of hollow that we're feeling within us, and we feel that is going to bring it about. But this whole thing is a game that the mind plays on itself. There is no hollow, because a sense of fullness is felt within, so the sense of fullness must already be there. The hollow is an illusion the mind puts up so that we can run after something so it can feel its own joy. And this, it may sound like a big psychological exercise, but it's a very practical thing. And it comes down to the mind playing a game with its own self. When this mind is observed, we see things as they are. We see the habitual ways or promptings of the mind. We're able to respond to things as they are, do what needs to be done, and gradually weaken the force of conditioning, which is at the root of all of our suffering, of all of our distress, of all of our sorrow, of all of our turmoil, and therefore of the grip of samsara, which is nothing else. Somebody had mentioned very wisely that samsara is the same as some sorrow. It is the grief that the heart holds, and that can be let go, and in that letting go, there is no loss. So where do we start? Everything helps, my friend, but first, we have to help our own selves. We have to change inwardly and want change. Until we want change, change will not come. Very often, we want change, but we're not willing to change ourselves. And that is why we struggle with change. We want change, but we don't want to change. Wanting change and wanting to change are the same thing. We cannot have change until we're willing to be change. The being change is the change that we seek, and we have to have clarity in doing this. So the very first step is awakening to see the danger of walking status quo or staying the course. Now, many things help. One, the study of scriptures, which is not actually the study of scriptures, but the study of ourselves through scriptures. We see our habitual ways. We understand our mind, and we understand how we sustain and cause and nourish the very root of our problems within ourselves. And two, the company of the wise, which is the company of wisdom. This is not just limited to people. The wise is the good in every condition. People, conditions, books, everything of that kind. All these help kindle one's own flame of awakening. The second part is having awakened, having seen the danger in an unexamined life. Where do we start and what do we do? Well, having awakened, it's important to stay awake. And to stay awake, there is nothing better or more vital than self-effort. Conscious effort in the moment, in every moment, to deal with situations as they are, to do what needs to be done, the best at what needs to be done, not what I need to do. So self-effort is necessary to embrace the good in every situation and to let go of habit. And that's what it does. And it strengthens in everything that we do. The good in what we eat, the good in what we do. When we embrace that, what is the best thing to do? What is the right thing to do? We let go of the force of habit. And at the same time, there must be an abandonment in every pursuit of pleasure. My friends, we are not talking about pleasure here. Pursuit. We pursue things because we think or we have a notion that they will bring about a certain condition. That condition, as we have discussed earlier, is already there. Nothing can bring about a sense of joy if joy wasn't already there. Think about it. If happiness and joy weren't already there, nothing in the world could bring them about. This doesn't mean that we refuse things, but it means that we stop the pursuit of things, because pursuit is always packaged with what it will deliver, the perception of what it will deliver, and that is not an accurate read. So, these two go hand in hand. Self-effort is a direction that we are moving in to see things as they are, to deal with things as they are, and to stop the pursuit. Pursuit is running after habitual ways. This will deliver that, that will do that, this will bring hurt, this will bring joy. And all of those are habitual or habit, which is in our mind only. It's not in things, it's in the mind. So what we have here is a twin, single action, double-sided single action of doing the good and avoiding what is not conducive, or Vairagya and Abhyasa, as it's called in the language of yoga. When we do this, a fullness starts to be experienced as the mind thins itself of all of its notions, and the natural joy of the mind rises to the surface. Friends, we've talked about four things today. One, the illusion. What is done by the mind alone is action, and what is abandoned by the mind alone is renunciation. Very often, we give up things on the outer, but we don't give up the hole that we have on the inner, and it seems to be a struggle to get out of what is not as good and to get into what is as good. So the cure for it, Vasishtha says, is the mind runs after them because of a false notion it has about them. The mind doesn't run after them because of the object themselves, but the notion it has of them. If that notion is removed, it is easy to get over the force of habit. And how is that notion removed? This is where spiritual discipline came in. Spiritual discipline is a mind that's watched continuously. The inner is watched along with the outer. And therefore, to be able to see the outer, to see the inner either rushing to it or rejecting it, to focus on the outer, just what is, and to be able to respond to just what is in the light of wisdom, without the grip of the inner, is spiritual discipline. Many things help in this process, but we have to be willing to help ourselves first. The study of scriptures, which is actually the study of the self through scriptures. The company of the wise, which is the company of wisdom in every case. What is good, what is best, including our thoughts, which are the company we keep mentally. And lastly, we talked about the abandonment of the pursuit of pleasure. We didn't speak about the abandonment of pleasure. That's actually not even possible. Well, or if it is, it's not wise. Pursuit of pleasure is because the mind has a notion, this will bring this, and this will not bring that. And our focus is to weaken this mind that pushes us towards or repels us from conditions disturbing our whole peace, and therefore disturbs the natural sense of tranquility and joy which is already innate and present within us. Next time, we continue with the important teachings of the third chapter of the Yoga Vasishtha. Friends, thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or PDF summary, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.